Are you ready to revolutionize your livestock management with virtual fencing? eShepherd is the virtual fencing solution by Gallagher that makes managing your cowherd easier, more efficient, and stress-free. Imagine adjusting grazing boundaries in minutes, all from your phone. With eShepherd's intuitive app, you can monitor livestock and track each individual cow or heifer. As one customer said, "With eShepherd, I can guide my herd without the stress. It's like having an extra pair of hands. Save time, save money, and improve animal welfare with virtual fencing. It's smarter, simpler herd management designed for today's dairy and beef producers. Visit tryvirtualfencing.com to learn more and see how it works. Take control of your grazing strategy with virtual fencing today." Welcome to the Moose Room. Going to continue on with our venture down the beef on dairy route again and talk a little bit about some of the research that we've done here in Minnesota. But first, I think I'm going to make this a three-part series. So last week we talked about some of the research that is happening in other places, a little bit about beef on dairy and semen usage in dairy cows. Today we're going to talk some of the research that we've done and then talk about some of the new stuff that just happened within the last month here on some of the carcass data that we've collected. And then next week, I think I'm going to venture down the genomics route. So we've taken these beef on dairy animals, we've genomic tested them with a beef on dairy platform. And I wanted to share the results that we got back as far as the values for carcass traits from the genomics and how they complement the carcass data that we saw, and really what can you do with the genomics, and is it really worth it to genomic test a terminal animal? So we're going to talk about that next week. So kind of a three-part series on beef on dairy for our listeners. But today, let's talk about some of the research that we've done here. In 2018 is when I really started going down the beef on dairy route here, just like everybody else was. Dairy calves were worth less than beef cross calves, so, and trying to really limit our heifer numbers. And that's how we got into beef on dairy crossing. And I first started with Limousine because Limousine was the probably popular choice at the time, especially I live out here in Western Minnesota. And Limousine is quite popular out here in the western part of the state. So we were using Limousine as well. So we bred them to our dairy cows. And the first study that we did was just trying to figure out what happened as pre-weaned calves. I think most of the studies that we see on beef on dairy genetics are in the feedlot and what happens after they've been raised to 400 or 500 pounds. Then we see what studies people have done. But we kind of forget about what happens as pre-weaned calves. So I had some Limousine cross calves, and we raised them on an auto feeder that we had here at our research center. So we had Limousine crossbred heifers. So heifers in a beef on dairy situation, that's a whole different ball game. Most of the research is not talking about these beef on dairy crossbred heifer calves and how to feed them. And maybe that'll be happening into the future, but most of the time we're focusing on the male calves. So we kept some of these Limousine cross heifer calves. We also had Limousine cross bull calves, and we compared them to dairy calves, Holstein, and some of our crossbred animals. So we found that the Limousine cross bull calves, if we compare them to Holsteins, on average are about 10 pounds more than what dairy calves were. Bull calves were about 4 pounds more than the Limousine cross heifer calves. So the Limousine cross bull calves are going to be a little bit larger. What about gain? Average daily gain. Those Limousine crossbred dairy bull calves had the best growth. 2.2 pounds per day average daily gain through weaning. And we wean these calves at 8 weeks of age. The Limousine crossbred heifer calves were just slightly less than those bull calves, but they were more than a Holstein. So we got good growth out of these Limousine crossbred calves compared to dairy calves. The interesting part about this was it comes into efficiency and milk consumption. So they were on an auto feeder. We recorded all of their milk intake. The Limousine cross calves on average consumed about 50 less liters across the 8 weeks. So about 1 liter less of milk per day than the regular dairy calves. So if you add that up, obviously you get less intake for those Limousine crossbred calves and you got more growth. So that is really what hybrid vigor is you're getting more growth out of those animals with reduced intake. They're way more efficient than a dairy calf. We talk about total cost. If you add up the cost, yes, those Limousine crossbred calves had less cost per day compared to dairy calves. Maybe you wouldn't think about it as much. If I look at it across the 8 weeks, it's about $15. So maybe about 50 cents less per day in cost for those beef on dairy crosses compared to dairy calves. So that's really where we started, because trying to figure out how to feed these pre-weaned beef on dairy crosses. And there's some people trying to figure it out, but obviously not very many. There's a lot of information that can be garnered from the pre-weaned calf stage, because that probably sets us up for what happens at the end of their life before harvest. So let's talk about our study. So as you know, I have not necessarily think that one breed is the best for beef on dairy crossing. So we went down the road, and over time, I have certainly progressed. We went from Limousine, and then our calf buyer, we had talked to them and maybe wanted to move to Angus. So we started breeding to Angus in all of our animals to see what happened. And then it was like, well, I've seen some other farms that were using Simmental, Charolais, and some other Wagyu breeds. So I thought, well, let's start figuring out what breeds can work for beef on dairy crossing. So we took our dairy herd, and obviously I was using this to limit heifer numbers as well, because we use sex semen. So we used a lot of beef semen, and I bred our cows to Angus and Charolais, Hereford, Limousine, and Simmental. So we used 5 breeds to try and generate some of these beef on dairy crosses, because I wasn't sure which breed would be the best. So again, we fed them through the pre-wean calf stage because I was interested in that. We put them on our automatic calf feeder so we could actually get milk intake. We could get growth every day of those calves, because I was really curious what happens during the pre-wean phase. So here is what we found during pre-weaning. So if you think about birth weight on these calves, Angus, by far the lowest birth weight, by 10 pounds. They were 81 pound calves on Angus. The other breeds were 91 to 95. Simmental was 95, but all relatively in the 90s, with Angus being slightly less. Well, we weaned these calves at 8 weeks. What about weaning weights? Hereford had the highest weaning weights of these beef on dairy crosses, 241 pounds. Angus, 226, and the other breeds right in there, about 220 pounds. So Hereford by far was 20 to 30 pounds more than some of these other ones at 8 weeks of weaning. And sort of if you look at it from an average daily gain perspective, the Herefords were 2.4 pounds average daily gain, Angus 2.1, Limousine 2.0, Simmental 2.1, and Charolais 1.98. So man, those Herefords really grew during the pre-weaning phase, and the other breeds did just as well. All of them grow really well in the pre-weaning calf phase. And if you feed them enough milk and give them grain, they're going to do well, regardless of what breed they are. And we'll talk a little bit later. The Herefords had the best average daily gain. Well, it may be translated into a little more fat on them when they went to harvest. So these calves, once they got weaned, they went into a feedlot and were fed corn-based diet through finishing. And we weighed them once a week to look at their growth. So what does their growth look like? You know, they were all about the same size coming off of weaning at 8 weeks of age. Now, when you look at growth of these calves across time, it's interesting because the Angus, the Simmental, and the Charolais had really good growth during about the first 6 months after we put them into feedlot. They grew really well. All of these animals grew quite well. However, at about 6 months of age, maybe the Angus animals started to slow down a little bit, didn't grow as fast as the Simmental and the Charolais. The Hereford and the Limousine were pretty similar in growth, comparable to the other breeds. And by the end of their growth period, the Angus, Hereford, and Limousine were all about the same size, roughly 1,200, close to 1,300 pounds. And the Charolais and the Simmental were probably 50 pounds more on average compared to the other breeds. So the Simmental and the Charolais had quite a bit of growth across that time. So let's compare average daily gain from birth till when they got harvested. Average daily gain was Angus 3.18, Charolais 3.1, Hereford 3.21, Limousine 2.94, and Simmental 2.96. So they all had really good growth, close to 3 pounds average daily gain across their lifetime. Angus and Hereford were the highest, actually. And if you look at the total gain that these animals had across their lifetime, about 14, 15 months, the Angus were 1,250 pounds, Charolais 1,325. So the Charolais put on 75 more pounds than the Angus did. Hereford 1,277, so just a little bit more than the Angus. Limousine 1,223, so the Limousine crosses were less than the Angus. And Simmental 1,230, so they were less than the Angus as well. So the Limousine, Simmental maybe didn't quite grow as well towards the finishing phase. But man, those Charolais, they put on a lot of growth. If you look at days to harvest, so this is days from birth till age that we harvested them, the Angus were by far the lowest, 428 days. The Charolais, 460 days, so 30 more days to harvest on those Charolais. So they had more time to grow. Hereford, 433, about the same as the Angus. The Limousine and the Simmental, 450. So the Angus and the Hereford were about 20 days less than the Charolais, Limousine, and Simmental as far as time to harvest. And that could really equate to more money. 3 weeks less in the feedlot, that certainly would be real dollars. So we harvested them at Tyson Fresh Meats in Dakota City, Nebraska, where they process 5,000 to 6,000 head per day. So it is quite interesting. We are very grateful for working with Tyson to be able to let us into the harvest plant to collect this data on our steers. It is fascinating to be in one of those facilities just to see the immense how animals are graded and how they are fabricated. It is quite impressive. So let's talk about these animals at harvest and what happened. So they all went there, we harvested them, and got actually lots of good data at the plant. And then we also collected strip loins. So we collected some meat off of these animals to bring back to Minnesota here and do some additional analysis. So if you think about hot carcass weight was the highest for Charolais and Hereford, Charlet was by far the highest, 870 pounds hot carcass weight compared to Angus 817. So 60 pounds more carcass weight on a Charlet compared to an Angus. The Hereford were at 860, so just slightly less than the Charlet. Limousin and Simmental were the same as Angus, 812 and 819. So really comparable, but the Charlet and the Hereford had more carcass weight. Ribeye area was quite interesting. Ribeye area was about the same for all of the breeds. Angus, Charlet, Hereford, Simmental, right around 12.1 to 12.4 ribeye area. However, the Limousin had a ribeye area of 13.9. So almost two more inches of ribeye area compared to the other breeds. And that's what the Limousin is known for. Big ribeyes. So we saw that in those Limousin crosses. Back fat. Well, what's your guess? Hereford had the most back fat, 0.64, compared to the other breeds were 0.46 to 0.48. So almost quite a bit, 0.2 more inches of back fat in a Hereford animal compared to the other breeds. Kidney, pelvic, and heart fat, all about the same. Actually, Limousin was a little bit less than the other breeds. All of them right around 1.82 to 1.84, Limousin 1.74. So pretty comparable. But the biggest thing was that ribeye area was the largest for Limousin, back fat the most for the Hereford animals. So really, if you look at the yield grade, so we can get yield grades based on these carcasses. If you think about it from a fat perspective, higher yield grade is more fat, higher yield grade, more weight, more muscling. So who had the highest yield grade? Hereford had the highest yield grade because there were just more fat on the animal, back fat. Simmental was less than the Hereford, 3.4. Hereford, 3.8 yield grade. Charlet, 3.3. Angus, 3.2. Limousin, 2.97. So higher yield grades for Hereford by a considerable margin because of more back fat on those animals. When we looked at grades, so you're interested in how did these animals grade out? Choice, prime, select, did any go CAB? What were the other programs that were listed for these steers? Well, interestingly, 76% of them went choice. We had a lot of animals go choice. And that's what we want to see. Most definitely, we want choice. Prime is even better. We had actually five animals go prime. So we had, of the animals that went prime, two were Angus, one was Hereford, and two Simmental were the ones that went prime. We did, unfortunately, have four select animals. And there's nothing wrong with select animals. They just didn't have enough marbling compared to the others. It's just less marbling, more lean meat. And those were Charlet and Limousin. And you would maybe expect that from those breeds to have a little bit higher percentage of select because not as well marbled animals. But we had a lot of all of the breeds had a high percentage animals go choice, which is good. Now, if you look at CAB, so Certified Angus Beef, that was a program that we had there. All of the Angus, except for one, went CAB. You would figure that. Most of them would have a black hide. There was one Angus Holstein that went choice, but was not CAB. We had some Simmental go CAB. So Simmental bulls, black bulls that we used went CAB. We had a Limousin go CAB, obviously used black hide there. And we had a Hereford go CAB. Prime CAB on a Hereford. Isn't that interesting? So we have this Hereford cross, no Angus whatsoever in it, and it goes Certified Angus Beef. We're quite happy with the quality grades that we had from these steers. Like I said, mostly choice, some primes. An interesting part is that when we were at the Tyson plant, there was quite a few animals that they had called that went Hy-Vee. I'm trying to figure out, what is that? I didn't really understand it. They kept saying Hy-Vee, Hy-Vee. Well, it's a grocery store here in the Midwest. Hy-Vee has their own specifications for beef that they want for their customers. So we actually had quite a few of our steers go Hy-Vee, which is high quality meats as well that go into the Hy-Vee grocery stores. We had one steer that went into a BMA program, and it was a Charolais cross. He had the highest carcass weight, 1,000 pounds carcass weight. He was a big steer. And he went BMA, which is basically B maturity. It was looked like he was getting older, and they put him into B maturity. I actually looked at this steer on the rail, and he had a little bit darker meat, darker red meat than the others. Maybe had pretty decent marbling, but he was a massive carcass. And so that was the only one. Maybe the Charolais got a little too big for us. We didn't get any discounts, no discounts for him by going select. So let's talk about some carcass meat quality characteristics, and then we'll end talking about some financial things that we found. So we took off some strip loins from these steers and at the Tyson plant. We're able to bring them back here. We aged them for 10 days, and then some of them we cooked, and some of them we scored for color score. If you look at shear force, so this is Warner Bratzler shear force. So it's the amount of force that it takes to go through a piece of meat. So when you think about shear force values, all of them were pretty comparable. The Limousine was a little bit less, which probably indicated that the Limousine steaks maybe were a little bit less tender than some of the other ones. Color score, all about the same. Angus was a little bit higher, probably the highest for an L-star value, which is lightness. So it measures the light of those steaks. L-star is brightness. So the Angus steaks were a little bit brighter. If you think about redness, the Simmental steaks probably had the highest redness value. Angus was the lowest. And if you think about yellow and blue tint, they were all about the same. So Angus less light and less red on their steaks compared to the other ones. Limousine maybe a little bit less tender. So what about economics of all these animals? So we got the harvest sheet back from Tyson on these animals. Our base price was $3.20 a pound. That's the base for all of these animals, which was actually pretty good based on carcass weight. The prime grading was 25 cents a pound. So that was the premium for prime. So you get an extra 25 cents a pound for prime. CAB, an extra 6 cents per pound for CAB, and an extra 13 and a half cents for choice. There was no deducts for the four select animals. As I look at the harvest sheet, to know that you got a better premium for choice beef compared to the CAB. So regardless of what these animals did, we obviously, prime is the best. You get 25 more cents. That's wonderful. But we did better by having these animals go choice than they did CAB. Now, that's how we got paid. Everybody can probably argue whether CAB is good or not and whether you get the premium or not. But it appeared that based on our harvest sheet, we did not get much of a premium for CAB. We got all the premium for the choice. So like I said, our cost overall was $1.99 live weight, and on the carcass weight, $3.28 a pound. That's how we were paid for these steers. Now, if you look at it from, let's compare the breeds from a price standpoint. If you think about it from a price per pound of carcass weight, Angus, $3.32. Charolais, $3.30. Hereford, $3.34. Limousine, $3.30. Simmental, $3.37. So we got really good prices for all of these breeds, regardless of how they performed. If you look at it from a total revenue standpoint, so total price with the premium for each steer on average, Angus, $2,709. Charolais, $2,865. Hereford, $2,863. Limousine, $2,705. Simmental, $2,738. So we got more total revenue for the Charolais and the Hereford animals than we did for the other breeds, which is interesting. Now you could say, well, why is that? Well, the Charolais were much bigger. We got more growth out of them. They were larger when they went to harvest. There was larger carcass weights on those Charolais and Herefords. So in the end, we got better revenue for them because they were growthier animals. Regardless of if those Charolais went CAB or prime, they, like I said, they all went choice except for a couple. But we did really well from a price standpoint with all of the breeds. If you take out the premiums, it's the same. Just base price. Just thinking about it from a live weight, no prime, no choice, no CAB, no nothing. The Hereford and Charolais animals got about $100 more per steer compared to the other breeds. Charolais was $2,783, Angus $2,618, Hereford about the same, $2,601 for the Simmentals. So almost $175 more for a Charolais animal than we did on a Simmental. And we didn't have any premiums included in that. So it is interesting when you really break this down from an economic perspective, what would you do? I don't know. I would probably use multiple breeds. I'm not necessarily sold. Now, we could say that, or Brad could say, well, this kind of proves my point that all of the beef breeds do well when we cross them with dairy cattle, which is, I think that's right. It depends on your management, depends on your market, depends on your feeding program. But what we found was that all of the breeds did well and they were very comparable, whether they were Angus and black-hided or Charolais, these mousy white-colored animals, or Hereford. A lot of people have discounted that one, but they were good animals as well. So in the end, we have more going to go to market. So there'll be a few more probably within the next month or so. We'll have another group of the same breed groups go to market. So we'll have more data by the end of the spring. But I think this gives you an idea about what is happening out there and that you can make money with any of these breeds in crossing dairy cows. If you feed them well, feed them right, and take care of them, they're going to make you money regardless of what breed they are. So next week, we'll talk about the genomics and kind of compare and see what the genomic tests are on these steers and see how well they compare to the genomic tests compared to what we saw from a carcass perspective. So with that, I think we'll end there today. If you have any comments or questions or particularly scathing rebuttals because I didn't talk good about some of the breeds in many different ways, I think that all breeds were good in some things and not so good in others. But if you have any comments, feel free to let me know. You can let us know at the Moose Room, that's themoosroom at umn.edu. Or look us up on the web, University of Minnesota Livestock Extension. And with that, thanks for listening today, and we'll see you next week talking about genomics on these animals. Bye.